Hello and welcome once again to the Bingham Boys Podcast. Myself, John Saltis, and my fellow Bingham Canyon native, Highland Boy from across the canyon. I'm a Copperfield boy. People know the canyon. And Ron, how you doing? Ron Yankich, what's new?
Not much. You look better, John. You don't look like you were in another fight over the last week, so you're looking good. I'm doing good.
It's the body blows you don't see. The face is doing better.
That's true.
But I and Ron were talking today about things to talk about, and I can kind of outline some things you might be hearing on this show. And by the way, thinking of things that we want to talk about, we always like to hear from people, and we do get our share of emails. So if you have any topics you want two grumpy old men to talk about, why, we're welcome to hear it. Just send me an email at john@cityweekly.net, and chances are really good that we might answer the question for you.
Yeah, and send them to John, because my ability with anything other than the landline phone is not that great.
Can't text on landline. So coming up this week, we're going to talk about a lot of things have been in the news. Of course, yesterday was Memorial Day. We'll be talking about our thoughts about that and veterans, what's our ties to both of those through our canyon lives. We'll get into a couple other topics. Our favorites, of course, are Bingham, and we hope to talk about the old Beeline gas station that was down in Lead Mine for just a minute. And we can't seem to get enough of this guy, Donald Trump. What, you know, he's always on everybody's...
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Trump is that he's the president of the United States. He's a public figure that is always in the news, either by things he does or things that he says, and he is the president. He's the leader of the free world. That's still the truth. And so we're going to talk about him. And the other reason we're going to talk about him is because it's what our parents would be talking about this time. That's part of this. We're not talking only about our own personal opinions, but we try to bring in the general opinion of people from Bingham that we admired and grew up with, and kind of what they would think, this mining community of amalgam of people from all over the world, what they would have to say, and they would disagree, but what they would have to say about some of the things that he and others have done. And that's kind of the backbone of this program.
Yeah, what makes it difficult in this era is that no matter, even if you try to tune him out, he tunes himself into your lives daily with midnight rambling, crazy tweets on his own on Twitter or on Truth Social's own networks that are suddenly the next morning front page news on pages like Huffington Post or Drudge or other ones. I mean, he makes the news. Call it a distraction, call it ignorance, call it whatever you will, but it's there and it's for the taking.
Yep. I mean, it's kind of like that unmuffled motorcycle in the middle of the night that you have to think about and talk about the next day.
Well, you can fix an unmuffled motorcycle, Ron.
Good point.
Okay, so besides that, we'll touch a bit on a couple things. Perhaps we're looking to talk about things in the news like journalism, the Jake Tapper non-reveal about the mental state of former right. President Biden, Scott Pelley, a stellar journalist at CBS 60 Minutes, giving a commencement speech at Wake Forest, and how those two things are in contrast. But right. Ron, anything else you want to tap into?
I think that, and we had talked about this, we want to talk a little bit about Memorial Day, which was yesterday. And
why don't you go there? Where were you? Did you go to Bingham?
I did. I went to 8 cemeteries.
Oh my God!
My family has been unable to agree where they're all going to be buried, and so I did 8 cemeteries in 3 days, and was honored to. I mean, I went to all of my grandparents, both sides, my wife's family, and my mom and dad, and aunts and uncles, and basically always end at the Bingham City Cemetery, which is up below Copperton, and which to me is always kind of the homecoming. Going up there. And it's just interesting when we think about Memorial Day. I mean, the real purpose of it was once called Decoration Day, and it was actually for only veterans who had been killed in wars. That was the original purpose for it, and to honor them was called Decoration Day, and the decoration indicating to decorate the graves, but also to honor them for their service. And but we've expanded it. Some people don't like that. I read a little bit on the internet. There's a lot of pushback from some veterans groups that we should only focus on that. And so, but I make the tour of the cemeteries, and it's interesting when we go to Bingham, because you walk around and you see all those the wonderful names that I think we mentioned this in one other podcast. You go up there, and there are names from every area of the world, literally up there, from Svensson to Zadunich, and from I don't know, Abreu to
King. King. I know yeah. the King family.
And the King family. Saw their, I passed by their graves. It's close to my other's family members. But one of the things I want to just mention briefly about that is when you go up there, you see all these little tombstones. They're very small, or they're little graves that have just a marker on it. And there are babies that died. And there are a number of Yangtze babies up there that have small tombstones on them, and we don't know actually whose children they were. And I've done forever the graves of two of my, an aunt and an uncle, my dad's sister and brother that were older than him. One of them died as a two-year-old, and the other one died when he was about 11. He died from what they then called blood poisoning, we would now call sepsis. And I don't know what the baby died of, but there are lots of them with all the families up there. And it's because at that time, again, there was no safety net. And a lot of those people did not have access in the early days. And we're talking the late 19th century into the 20s. And even after that, to a degree, there was no medical treatment for them. And the company did help a little bit, but not very much. And this was a non-union place, so there wasn't the ability to get help from the unions or the Knights of Columbus, which has started out with that type of attitude in, I think it's in Providence, Rhode Island, I forget, or upstate New York. But anyway, so the babies died. And the tragedy of that is this, going to where we are, is two things in my mind. And that is that we continue to cut the social safety net here in the United States today under the guise of saving money. And it seems to me that one of the things that we miss is that it is government's responsibility to save lives and to save lives of the people that are born here. And I want to just offer this for thought to people. We now have a president and a Republican Congress that wants to eliminate birthright citizenship. All of these kids were born here. They died here. They were citizens when they were born and died. And it's in the Constitution. And he can talk his way around it all he wants, unless the Supreme Court rolls over and plays dead, literally. Then birthright citizenship is going to require an amendment to the Constitution. That's our legacy as a country. These people came here, made America good and great at the time, did what they could because they wanted to be here and they wanted their kids to be born here. And when we think about where we are relative to just that observation that I made on Saturday when I was up there, we have an obligation to the kids that are born here. I don't care where they're from. I don't care what color, race, creed, or whatever. The little children born on American, Native American reservations, all of those people in so-called ghettos, in the hard scrabble streets of places, in the outlying places in the country, they deserve
citizenship to start with because they were born right. A citizen, and then they deserve the honor that comes with it. My mother had in that graveyard, they're unmarked. Somebody has a plot or a platter, whatever they're calling, you know, where they are actually.
Right.
She's got two sisters in there, and both born live birth, both babies died pretty soon after birth. And, you know, baby Napoleon, that was her maiden name.
Right.
She would always point to where they were, and she'd be like, well, if you look where the fourth post down and then goes right. 10 steps over, right around there, you know. So, well, I have two aunts in there, obviously never knew. And just as you said, they were children of a Greek, a Cretan immigrant on one side and a Utah-born woman on the other. But still, she lost two sisters that are there. I my memories of the Bingham Cemetery, there's that one, but there used to be one up farther in the canyon called the Chandler Cemetery
right.
above Dry Fork. And God, we'd walk around in there and sink, you know, because right. there were no marked graves, and all of a sudden you'd step on a grave or something. There was a crypt up there, the Chandler's, I guess, is who was in it. I think it was the Chandler's. So then the Copperton, the one at Copperton was the one that just scared everybody. It was always all the scary stories of seeing ghosts and everything
you mean
in there.
The present day Bingham Cemetery.
Yeah, the present day one, yeah. I almost went away, and then a bunch of Boy Scouts for a troop downtown, particularly one Boy Scout in particular, really went to bat for it. And he went and just dolled up everything and did a lot of research of it. And really remarkably had a big impact on changing the nature of that cemetery.
No, he and I've got to write down and get his name because we've got to honor him. He and his family, they went back through records. He got his his Eagle merit badge in part for that, and then continued on. It became something that he and his family really did, and I will get their names. I know their names. Really, really good people. And he outlined where people were buried, went through the records to find all that out. And a lot of the graves that are up there now, I mean, there's no grass up there. It's mainly weeds. But and then after he did that, a lot of families came back and started going through the cemetery and then honoring their decedents. The one thing I did notice, and I notice it more every year, is that it's only people with canes, people that clearly have arthritis, old men that are bald, that are up at cemeteries honoring their legacy. It stuns me that we've gotten to a point where people don't honor their heritage. And again, this is one of the reasons we're doing this podcast, is that that's what you do on Memorial Day. They are the ones that brought you to where you are.
Do you remember your first memorial, or actually it would be Veterans Day, wouldn't it? But it was Decoration Day. But at that time, you know, it was World War One vets that you'd see a few of those, and then a lot of World War Two guys in Korean, Vietnam. And now there's painfully few World War Two vets still living. And I think that you know this, that the monument in Copperton Park, that Chicago Charlie funded and put in there for the veterans that served in the wars in Bingham Canyon. You got Yengeches on there. Got like five uncles on there, six uncles. Yeah. I don't even know. I have to go count them.
Yeah, my dad's on it. My Uncle Johnny is. And then my grandfather, Mike's, my dad's dad, had a cousin named Matt. And some of his family is on it. And it's interesting to see. Maybe this is a good time for me to throw in a pitch, John, and that is that we do a run every year on the first Saturday in
December.
This year it's December 6th, and we do it in memory of my brother, a wonderful lady named Geraldine Christensen, who was Geraldine Ennis, who was a judge. Geraldine Christensen was also a judge. Geraldine Ennis, I went to high school with her sons and were good friends with them. And then also a good friend of mine named Jeff Jensen, who was in law school with me. We do this run now. We honor all three of those families and those three people, but we donate the money to veterans causes. So we fund the Veterans Court and the Third District Court. And we also give money to the homeless vets, and not veterinarians, veterans. And we also give money to the police officers' memorial up at the Capitol to try to give back. And so we welcome you to come, rain, snow, shine. We do it on the 11 o'clock on the first Saturday in December, and we'd like people to come up. And we
Is your route up?
Yeah, the route is up. There is a... my secretary has a website that we can give you the information so that you can come up. It's a 5K walk run. More people walk it than run it now, but it's for a good cause. And we also support the Methodist Church there, which supported us up in Highland Boy forever. They have their bake sale and their bazaar at the same time, and so it's just kind of fun. So come up, but we do it for veterans.
You know, speaking of, my grandfather, the Cretan, on the War Memorial in Vernal, Utah, of all places, all of our people that are following us from Vernal, go check it out. His name's on there.
Really?
Well, he signed up into the United States Army, even though he wasn't a citizen. So, you know, big thank you to him, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
he didn't get a lot of thanks for doing that, but he's out there on that monument. His name's on there twice, once with his Greek spelled name and then once with his anglicized name. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, that monument is right by the courthouse.
Yeah, he's on there.
And it's a beautiful monument.
And then I have the veteran, that's my grandfather's side, that's World War One. I lost a cousin who I never met, obviously, in World War Two. Died tail end of World War Two. He's on the monuments as a casualty. He's not on the Bingham Monument because the family moved out of Bingham beforehand. he's among them and the other monument. You see, you know, with traces to World War II veterans, Utahns that passed in the war. And like I said, my other uncles that are on there, everybody we knew in Bingham as kids was named on there, virtually everyone.
Lots of different names, lots of Hispanic names and Basque names and Italian and Greek and Slavic names and Japanese names, too. because there was a large area near Copperfield, where John is from.
You can say it.
I know, I'm going to say, but I want to give the disclaimer. I mean, it was called Jap Camp, and that's where a lot of Japanese people lived. And we talked about that briefly on another thing. But the point is that they were people who believed in what America's supposed to be about.
Well, that's why we started this. We keep on trying to remind people. I don't remember the gang number, but I remember the fellow. He was in an internment camps. He was a water boy on one of the gangs up there on the dumps.
Right.
Water boy is not a pejorative term. It was actually a well-desired, well-sought-after job, a seniority job.
Yeah.
All you did was bring water up to fill a water tank up and feed the guys water every several hours or something and do anything else.
And maybe go on the speeder to get a bunch of spike mulch.
Yeah, that's about
like
it. I believe his name was Watanabe. I believe that was it. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, in Bingham, my dad told me he began his work in the mines on the Bingham and Garfield Railroad, and a lot of Japanese were working that railroad line. So my dad learned to speak Japanese a little bit when he was young. And, you know, they lived across the canyon. Greek camp was on the other side. I had Japanese neighbors, loved the culture. And so what those families went through, if we forget what they went through, some worked in the mine and stayed. Some were sent to internment camps, as you know.
Right.
Some joined the military. My dad told me of one guy that went back to Japan and fought for the Japanese army. I never came back here, but he left the canyon. But he knew those people well. We all knew them well. We're obligated, I believe, to not forget what happened to them, because it can happen again. In fact, in small doses, it's happening now.
No, it is happening right now. I mean, the biggest black mark on Franklin Roosevelt's presidency from a lifelong Roosevelt Democrat, and I'm talking about myself, is the internment camps and what happened in that regard. I mean, there's no excuse for it. The U.S. Supreme Court buckled under because of the war and affirmed his ability to do that. I know a number of people that come from families who their parents were interred, and one of my favorite people in the law, Judge Ray Uno, was interred. And he's a great man and a hallmark in the history of Utah for civil rights and fighting for civil rights for everybody. And one of the kindest people you had ever met, unlike myself, not loud about it and not likely to get angry about it, which I might, but who had a calm demeanor and was so able to relate the pain that his family had suffered without asking for retribution. He just didn't want it to happen again.
Right.
And it is happening again.
This fella told me, sitting with him one day, and he's having the water and he's smoking a cigarette, and told me, like, you know, just watching, he was a young kid at the time. He was old when we worked with him. You know, there went the washing machine, and there went some other piece of furniture, and then there went Mom and Dad, and there went all of us off to Topaz or someplace in the desert, and not to be seen for a while. Really a tragedy. You know what? It just dawned on me, curiously, there was a Japanese fighting unit in World War II that was highly decorated in Europe.
They fought in Italy.
Yeah. Well, recently, the new Secretary of Defense, Hegseth, he took umbrage to certain words like gay, so there's no reference to the Enola Gay.
Right.
You know,
I know.
How stupid is that?
Can we stop just for a second?
Yeah.
Let's out there laugh about that. It was, whether you believed that Truman was right or wrong, I come down on one side of it. And if you don't have an opinion, read John Hershey's book about that aspect of American history. It's a short book. It's a brilliant book. It was called The Enola Gay. It had nothing to do with lifestyle or identity.
It's his mother's name.
And we're going to eliminate that from our history. That is a big, important thing.
I spent a year of my life, not quite a year, living within a half a mile or less from the hangar where the Enola Gay was in Wendover. I lived on the other side of the fence when it was still an Air Force base. Yeah. So, you know, it's just the damnedest thing. But what I was going to get to was, didn't he also erase history on the Tuskegee Airmen?
Yeah, he did. He tried to. I think they fought back, though. I think that they repatriated some of that. Which is an interesting attitude for all of us, be we right or left, Democrat or Republican, independent or nothing. Why erase history that is bad?
Why is that bad?
Well, I'm not saying that
up to them being segregated.
Yeah.
But they did serve a tremendous service as fighter pilots. Those guys were tough.
No, you're right. I mean, they were American heroes. They are American heroes. He wanted to eliminate Jackie Robinson's complaints about him being wrongfully charged when he was in the military as a black man. What I'm saying is, why do we think that even if we think it is bad, that it's a good idea to eliminate history? Why do we want to do that? And we want to do it because we want to say everything has been the way it is today. And both the left and the right do this.
Well, where I was going, it was this way, Ron. Were similar erasures made about the Japanese fighting units in Italy?
No.
I haven't heard of it. If so,
no.
Which means that Hegseth's behavior is about race.
Well, of course it is.
Well, you don't get to hear that if you don't want to believe that. And a lot of people don't want to believe it's that. But it's certainly that. And it's a black and white issue. And it's the most wrong way turned for us to have taken in the past 4 or 5 years that I can think of, or in my life almost. We made so much progress to go backwards on that.
Well, but the thing about it is that, I'm sorry, that doesn't compute to me. So you're going to eliminate the word gay in everything you can in the Army. You shouldn't do it in any event, but it just shows ignorance at a level that is compounded by the arrogance that says that you can do it. I don't know why we do it. I don't know why. But then again, too, did you read about our president
commencement?
Well,
I both read it, and then I caught, there's two kinds of reporters. There's three kinds on it. One is balanced, which is kind of rare, and I don't remember the source. And there's the imbalanced, which is like even the New York Times headline said something like, "Truth sees new vision for the future for American soldiers," or something. And yet there's the contextual part that most Americans saw and are repulsed by. When he is standing before the nation's most honored young men and women at an academy that goes way to the Revolutionary War, to everything that's good about the military service as we at least understand it, and talk about trophy wives. And you go, what is going on? And he's wearing his advertising hat at the same time. But, saw what you saw.
It is a speech that is intended to go to the cadets. I didn't serve in the military. I have family that did. I've read a lot of military history. I honor those men and women because, you know what? They have more courage than me. I think I can say that. And the thing about it is they fought for freedom. They did. We were involved in wars in our history that we shouldn't have been involved in. But they paid, many of them, the ultimate sacrifice. And they sacrificed their youth for it. There are a lot of books out now, poetry books, that go back and have dug up the poetry of World War I, which is great. And these are young men and women that went and fought up to the present time and are still doing. They're giving their lives for their beliefs in this country. And this guy goes off on a rant about Levitt Town in New York and Long Island, and about how Levitt got in trouble, the guy that came up with that idea. And there were some problems with that too, because it was racially motivated in part, but we don't need to go off into that. And then goes from there that Levitt's real problem was that he had a trophy wife was bad, and that Trump talks about maybe it's not a bad idea about having a trophy wife, and goes off on this kind of wandering sewer off of the main river that he's supposed to be floating down. And you just go, you're the president of the United States. I don't care if you're a Trumper. I don't care if you are not. If you live in Edmonton, Alberta, you go, why? This is about talking to these young men in their service, not about you, not about Melania, not about Marg Maples or any of those. It's about these men. And then at the end of the ceremony, a ceremony that has been attended by U.S. Grant, who also gave this commencement speech, Dwight D. Eisenhower, John Pershing, run the list down. He then has to get out of there because, once again, he's got to go golfing.
No, he went to settle down Russia and China. I heard him say that.
On the golf course.
Yeah, on the golf course he did.
And that's where he went. I guess...
No, he said that to the cadets. I've got to leave.
And then went directly to the golf course.
Didn't shake hands. Look, some of this is, oh yeah, well, whatever. But at the core of it, it becomes the same thing. It's over and over and over again, this disrespect. It was only a few years ago, he said McCain was, he liked his heroes that weren't captured. And a few years after that, he called the guys losers.
Yeah. People that got killed in the war are losers. Wondered what was in it for the Marines that got killed at Belleau Wood, looking down on that cemetery. And here's the point. This isn't just John and I. I know my dad. I know your dad. I know the people that lived up there who knew the people that died in a number of wars or were wounded. They would all be outraged that that's the attitude that this guy, who never served, went to military academy, but never served, brought to what really is a hallowed place in American history. You may be a pacifist, but that is where great people have come from.
When he does that, I just don't know what more to react with. Like I said last time, it's the asteroid coming, and we deemed it's our own making. We are the asteroid. But, Ron, it's still time that we can move the course of that asteroid. It's pointless to keep saying he's a dumb man and there are poor people behind him. That's just not it. He's a cruel, incapable person. And that was cruelty there, I believe. And then the next day followed up with his same behavior at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers. I mean, it's like he can give a shit about that. He just has to be there for them for the ceremony. There's no passion, no commitment to it, no tie, no cultural anything. He's just walking through it.
Many people in life are narcissistic. If you're a criminal defense attorney for as long as I was, you realize that some of the people that you represent are so narcissistic that they don't see what their impact on other people is, ever. They have no remorse. They can't feel bad, even if they're in the right and they've done something, and they feel bad that there had to be an argument or whatever. The narcissists are the people that don't care. And that is because the only thing that counts is if they get to do what they want to do and how they want to do it. And I know that we've worried about that, we talk about Donald Trump too much, but it's impossible not to. I know as I sit here today that in the bars that we've talked about up in Bingham, the men that get off shift would be talking about this, because these were people that read the newspapers, and that was primarily it, and listened to the radios, and then when TV came out, that they would be talking about this. And over beers, they would be saying, can you believe what that no good SOB did?
Well, in World War II, as I mentioned, World War I start there. My grandfather didn't just join the army because he's a super patriot. He wanted to fight the people that were soon to occupy Greece and get them out of there. His family was suffering. Many of the men and women, even from Bingham, who served in World War II, were going, I got to get my ass over there because they're coming at Italy now.
Right.
Or we got to liberate Italy. And these are my cousins that are back home. I've got to go help them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just an impersonal, I'm going to any old war. It meant a lot to him. So you're right. You would have been astounded to know that somebody could remain silent at the mistreatment of those veterans and military people who made that commitment. Yeah. You can't. They would not stand for it.
No, and on top of it, they're making cuts to, and this is supposedly cost cutting necessities to the Veterans Affairs programs, veterans hospitals, and research that goes into helping veterans on a number of issues. And so the truth of the matter is, it's just astoundingly sad on the one hand, but people should be angry about it. And if you're not angry and you agree, you still should tell and talk to the politicians here in Utah that we should not agree with that. They should go on the record and disagree with that. But we'll see.
Well, we're not heading to great arcs right now in our history, I don't believe. Ron, didn't you tell me, I knew a little bit of your brother, not a lot of your brother. He was a well-regarded journalist. I think from memory, he wrote some quite telling stories on the governor of Maryland or something.
My brother Nick he worked at the Deseret News as a sports reporter when he was in school at the University of Utah. And I think it's funny. And it's something that a number of sports writers have said, but he did sports writing and liked it a lot. He was always, he always loved sports like I do and my dad did. But when he got his degree in journalism at the U, he then went to graduate school at the Medill School of Journalism, Northwestern, one of the two or three best in the country, along with Missouri and Columbia. And then worked first at the Hartford Times and then to the with the Baltimore Evening Sun. And I remember asking him why he had this great job. He got to go all these sporting events and how funny. And he said to me, he said, you know what? I'm tired of talking to naked men in locker rooms. And I wanted to do something serious.
Well, that's what landed him with the job at People Magazine.
Yeah, he was they were living in Baltimore, and I told John this story earlier today. My brother was a true journalist. If I can go back a little bit, I mean, one of his heroes is a guy named Steve Smilinich, who came from Highland Boy and became a writer for, I think, Associated Press. And my brother admired him a lot. We knew the Smilinich family very well. They were great. They were great people and are great people. But when he was working in Baltimore for the Baltimore Sun, it was when the People Magazine came out. And I happened to go down one day and I saw People Magazine. He hadn't told me anything about it. And we would talk about journalism quite a bit because I had thought about doing the same thing. But anyway, and I look in the, I guess it's called the masthead, right?
Right.
And there's my brother's name. He's the correspondent from, it may have been Connecticut, but it may have been Maryland. And I thought that was so cool. And so I called him. And I said, I just saw this. Bradich, I just saw this. You know, he goes, look, I did it as a favor for a friend. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to complete this. This is Photoplay Magazine. This is worse than...
he didn't like it.
No, than Photoplay Magazine. And this, unfortunately, I'm afraid is where journalism is going to go. So when my time is up and I've done what I told my friend I would do, I won't do this. And that was his attitude about journalism. Journalism was important. It wasn't about celebrity. It wasn't about who looked better today instead of yesterday.
Well, what year was this about?
I don't know.
Late 70s, early 80s? I don't remember.
I would say it's late 70s, early 80s, yeah.
Well, okay, so like he was right. And what went from news journalism, news reporting, became personality-centric.
Right.
To the point where you would write about or report about or broadcast about celebrities, and those were the people, to what is now morphed into today's era where the reporters are the celebrities.
Right.
And that has got a really tenaciously bad, call it a long, long hangover on what is good independent journalism when that happens, because to keep that stature, those people, if it means something to them to have that stature, and they don't do what you said you've cautioned young attorneys to walk away from the money or you're going to be corrupt. They've chosen the other route more times than not. And when you are close to your topic, like they have now become, the people that are getting the stories have close access to the president or the past president, anybody, access is access. That keeps them in the stature world, but it prevents them from being good reporters. And they don't report on certain things. I've said many times, I tell people all the time, you can call it fake news, you can call it biased news all day long, but at least you know that it's fake or biased or you believe it. I'm not worried about it. I'm worried about the stories you don't see.
Right. My brother always said, I mean, because I when I wrote for Private Eye and then City Weekly and then other papers and did stuff, because I had thought about going to journalism before I decided I was going to go to law school. My brother always hounded me on this. He said, look, you seek the truth, you write the truth, no matter who it is. If it's you or anybody else, I'm not going to write about you. You're my brother. But when I go to write a story and I'm going to be writing about someone and a problem that they have, I'm going to tell the truth. And if for some reason I can't tell the truth, I'm too close to this person, I hand it off to somebody else.
The handoff doesn't happen now.
And it doesn't. But the other thing he said to me was, and remember, you're never the story. The writer is never the story. If you read something where the writer has engaged himself into the story, then throw it away, because that means they're too close. unless it's a column. And he used the example of Jimmy Breslin, because Breslin's columns, or Mike Royko's columns,
they were first person.
They were
the
first person.
Everyman writers.
And they were the guys that wrote that type of column, but they weren't news. He made such a big distinction between real news and opinion that was so important to him. And I remain proud of him for that.
Well, you can see the payoff, because there's 30 people from Fox Network, approximately 30, that are now some position in the Trump administration. Yeah. So that proximity has a benefit. You know, the thing that I was hoping to move on to from that part of it is this people-centric stuff is, I just said, it's the stories that aren't told that are more frightening. And,
right.
And we hit on it last week, the story of former President Biden's hidden dementia, whatever you want to call it, lack of capacity. No one will know how bad it was, or at this time anyway. Did it affect any bad behaviors on the part of America? Yes or no. But it's become a talking point for the right. And part of that might have been avoided if a guy like Jake Tapper, who was on the inside of all that, had reported on time about it. What do you think?
Well,
would it have made a difference?
No, of course. I mean, my brother, he was cremated. I mean, his ashes are twirling around on my sister-in-law's.
He's not rolling over.
They're twirling around, because that is exactly what you don't do. And I mean, the hell with Jake Tapper. He's going to make a lot of money of his book. I'm going to buy his book. I want to read about it. And I'm angry at him. I watched him. I saw him during that period of time when I would turn on CNN occasionally. And again, we talked a little bit earlier about Van Jones, another guy that I liked, who I thought was a good guy, and then comes out after the election and says, well, we all knew that Kamala was in trouble and everybody knew it. Nobody would talk about it. Well, if you knew it, then say it. You're going on TV as a journalist.
Yep.
And the same with Tapper. And I can just see my brother and other good journalists I know, like Lex Hemphill or Nancy Mielich or John Shulian, or run the list down. Or yourself. Let's give you credit. You would say to somebody that worked for you, you're fired, okay? And since you learned about all of that stuff on my time, then I want the rights to the book. You don't have a right to do that. If the First Amendment means anything, it means, as my brother always said, you tell the truth. Well, when you got on and you on TV and you didn't talk about it, Jake, then you were lying to people.
Bob Woodward did the same thing with his Trump book, you know. So it's not a unknown ailment among the journalists these days that are supposedly journalists that have the primetime shows that move the needle. They're hiding stuff like that. What else do they know? That's what I'm saying. What you don't know, that's the fearful part. No, you can't even have a logical, you know, discussion about whatever happened to Biden, because it was 2 or 3 or 4 years ago. Why even talk about it? That's yesterday's game. Let's talk about today's game. And today's game is that we have an equally, potentially, much, much more dangerous predicate here with the guy in the White House now, because people know about him too, and they're not saying anything.
Yeah, but and you're 100% right. But that's why we need to talk about what happened with Biden. And we need Kamala to come home from Canberra, Australia, where she was on the news the other day about talking about the problems that America are having now. Come on home, Kamala, and tell us what you knew about President Biden, so we can tell the future people that are going to be elected to your position, you can't do this anymore. Let's just be honest. And so that is why it is important to go back with Biden. And it is important to, again, I said,
oh, I'm
this,
not saying don't go back to Biden. I'm saying don't validate the current situation because of Biden.
You're exactly right. Put Joe Biden's family out of it. That's a different thing. Everybody around him had to know something. And they're responsible for what happened.
Yeah, my narrative is that, yeah, he did it. He did it wrong. Democrats, you got to get your act together. Find real leadership. Find real truth. But that doesn't forgive what's going on now. And you can't remain silent now, because it's worse.
No, you're right.
Here's why. Because opposite of Jake Tapper, who I'm one Kevin Bacon removed from him, one of my greatest friends in the newspaper business. I don't know if Bill Frost knows him or knew him, but it was David Carr, who was a editor at the alternative newspaper in St. Paul. Then moved on to the Washington City Paper, D.C., built a great reputation there, then became a New York Times reporter, and was, you know, of some really serious stature when he passed away. But one of his mentored people was Jake Tapper. So, you know, he was at one of our conventions early on for like 3 seconds when we were in D.C. at a convention. I never met him, but that's my Jake Tapper relay. I thought every time I saw him on TV in the early days, I thought, way to go, David, you got a great guy here. But I've watched him become, either he was something different before or he's become something different now. But counterpoint to him yesterday, Scott Pelley, yeah. You know, Scott Pelley at CBS 60 Minutes delivered, you know, what's being hailed as potentially the anti-MAGA speech. I don't know if it's anti-MAGA. It's just so much as like real truth. I would just call it the real truth. It's not fake news. Do you mind if I read a little bit of his speech from yesterday?
No, I think you should. I mean, and people should watch it because it's done with a great deal of emotion.
It needs to be seen.
Yeah.
Okay, so here he said, did you hear the phrase, the declaration, in the declaration, pursuit of truth? Why attack universities? Why attack journalism? Because ignorance works for power. First, make the truth seekers live in fear. Sue the journalists for nothing. Then send masked agents to abduct a college student, a writer of her college paper who wrote an editorial supporting Palestinian rights, and send her to a prison in Louisiana and charge her with nothing. Then move to destroy law firms that stand up for the rights of others. With that done, power can rewrite history with grotesque false narratives that they can make heroes criminals and criminals heroes. And that is so damn true. That's an aside. And they can change the definition of words we use to describe reality. Also true, Scott. Diversity is now described as illegal. Equity is to be shunned. Inclusion is a dirty word. This is an old playbook, my friends. There is nothing new in this. George Orwell, who we met on the streets in London in 1948, he warned us what he called of newspeak. He understood that ignorance works for power. He goes on to talk about like Edward R. Murrow, the right. greatest journalist of all time, perhaps, in American culture. So that's the counterpoint. Scott Pelley standing up, and he's standing up for a company that just is on the verge of selling out CBS and 60 Minutes for a business deal brokered by Donald Trump with Paramount to help a billionaire friend out of trouble. This isn't even about speech at that point. It's about somebody lining their pockets at the harm of the great society that we've lived in and for 250 years honored the tradition of the First Amendment being sold out.
If everything is reduced to how much money you can make, there are going to be a lot of people that lose money because the people are making those deals. They're going to be the winners. They're going to win these deals. And the losers are going to be when it's, as we've seen papers disappear and we've seen the mega corporations that own television and radio stations and all of that. We lose the independent voices we have, which is, I guess, a good way to, we're close to ending. And that is this. And the one thing about podcasts, and I've never.
This is your first one. Well, this is your fifth one.
Yeah, this is my fifth.
Ron's number five.
This
ever.
Is my fifth podcast. The fact of the matter is, it's an open mic to the people. And you don't have to agree with what everybody says. And you have to determine whether or not it's something that you agree with. But it's meant to make you think. And it isn't something that is filtered through advertising or how many hits or how many misses or if we're hitting 300. It's about the ability to speak. And everybody has that ability. It's the one good thing, and that is it will be very difficult to stop people from talking. It used to be the Cracker Barrel at the store where Abe Lincoln held forth. Now this is kind of the medium where we can do it, and we want you, as John said at the beginning, send us what you think. Try to be nice, and but you don't have to be.
Don't have to be nice,
but also let us know what else you'd like to hear. But we also want to honor a couple people, and John's going to do that now that
we'll
it helped
three
us.
Three people, one an apology, and to that's to the people that we said at the outset, we talk about the Beeline gas station, the yellow little gas station at the bottom, well, near at Lead Mine, and our canyon from Lead Mine south, Lead Mine to the other direction had like three gas stations, Adderley Nichols, the Chevron right. by T.J. Hurley, and this one. But we'll get to that. But meanwhile, we do have to thank Laura Jones, who really gave us the courage to put this together, and her support. I guess we could call her, what do we call her, Bill?
She's a guardian angel.
Our guardian angel, producer, our friend, our buddy. I'll know Mara forever. And of course, thanking Bill Frost, who if you will have to have these guys on as guests.
Right.
Because Laura is so incredibly wise and so impassioned about local groups and affinities and cultures. And Bill, who's really, really funny. we'll get this going, and it's his studio besides. So
yeah, he never interrupts us, and we bring him a beer, and he records everything and does everything for us.
Okay, that's it for this week's Being a Boys podcast. Look for you. By the way, we can say it. I think we're getting consistent at number 5. We're out on Tuesday nights, so it'll hit social media sometime tonight. It's a Tuesday.
We're going to try to do it on Tuesdays. Summer holiday season may mess that up a little bit, but we're going to give it our best.
Okay. We got lots to go with next week, too. So take care, Ron.
God bless
you, John. Vote well.
Yep, you too. And don't get in any more accidents.
Yeah, I'm trying not to. We'll see you.